Right, we're on. Oh, I got it. July 18th, 2013. This is the Hermetic Hour with your host, Poke Runyon. And tonight we present a discussion on the history and the use of the dark mirror in medieval and Renaissance ritual magic. Now we will focus on historical accounts from Lynn Thorndike's History of Magic and Experimental Science, the Latin Picatrix, passages from the Grimoires, such as the Grimorum Verum and St. Cyprian, and the Kabbalistic Ispeclaria described by the late Arya Kaplan, along with references from folkloric sources and reference to the Saragossa manuscript. The modern use of the mirrors, magic mirrors, by P.B. Randolph, Franz Barden, and Joseph Lissowitzky will be examined. And this is a controversial subject among some contemporary Renaissance magic reenactors who use crystals for both evocation and invocation. Now, we will attempt to sort this out, so the newcomer to the art will have a better understanding of the full range of magical equipment and technique. So tune in and go through the looking glass. All right. Now, this is a kind of a delicate subject, because we have had since the revival of Renaissance, medieval Renaissance ceremonial magic, actual operations, which started in about 1988, I think, it started with Michael Craig's publication of his book Modern Magic, in which he revealed our mirror method, which he got from Nelson White's self-published book. But Craig's book is very popular. It went all over the world, and it's still in print. Although he since became so embarrassed that he's taken out most of the references to our system. But still, that started this off, because this was the first time that the occult public was really let in on the secret of how to do this sort of thing. And so as this progressed, at the same time this was going on, as these things always are, Steve Savdo over in Florida was trying to work the Goetia system, or did successfully work it, doing it the hard way. So there were some synchronicities going on in different methods, but Craig's book, Far and Away, started things off. And then, of course, we decided, well, if we're going to get our material blown out like that, we might as well go ahead and jump in. And so we did a video and our Book of Solomon's Magic, which followed that on. And the Book of Solomon's Magic, of course, has been in print ever since. It's gone through 16 printings now, and the video, of course, is still being sold and distributed all over the country. So this method of goetic evocation using the mirror was and is, of course, still quite popular, but what has arisen as a result of this is a number of people who have decided that, well, maybe that isn't the way they did it, and then maybe there were other ways to do it. So given rise, which I think is a good thing in a way, to people who have decided to go back and do it the old-fashioned way. Well, of course, we think, actually, that the mirror method, as far as the poetic animate is concerned, it probably was the old-fashioned way. But what the old-school magicians would like to do is to just sidestep the mirror altogether, because the mirror to them seems to be, I guess, too modern. So they like to sidestep it altogether and work with crystals or with apparently nothing at all, just a sort of a free-form kind of a thing, especially with evocation. And so what's arisen in the past, past 10 years or 12 years, is this old-school magic. Now, that's fine. I'm all for that. In fact, I think that the Frater Ashton Chasson, who we interviewed last week, and I think his book is wonderful, and I recommend it for everybody. He actually, though, is practicing what we might call the old school. In other words, he's going back doing it just the way they did it in the grimoires, and he's depending upon prayer and fasting and purification and doing all the things that, you know, and looking at it from a very, very, very much what he conceives as a Renaissance mindset or even a medieval mindset. Okay. I think that's fine, and I think that I know when I got started, I was trying to stay as close to the original methods as possible, and so what we have here is a very good, very fine idea of replicating these Renaissance procedures, but there is, from our point of view, a little bit of a problem with it. And the problem is that the Renaissance magicians really did use mirrors, and we'll show you tonight why you don't read that much about them in the grimoires, and you'll find out why. But they did use them, and they used them for what we call evocation. That's bringing things up out of yourself and out of the lower regions. Whereas invocation means calling upon a deity, like prayer, calling something down from a higher sort. People get this confused regularly, and they think they can evoke an angel. Well, yeah, I suppose you can, because angels, to some extent, live within you. So I suppose you could say you could evoke an angel, but actually, if you go to the Oxford Reference Dictionary and look up invocation and evocation, I think you'll see that the main use of evocation is to bring it up, to bring it out. It evokes feelings from you, memories from you, things buried in you. It's evocative, which means it plays upon your memories and your subconscious. That's what evocation means. And invocation is you're calling the divine. So you'll find as you get into this that there's a lot of confusion about this out there with people who looking at magic. Now, we want to kind of cut through that and kind of clarify it. Now, because this idea of sidestepping the mirrors entirely and trying to, you get the impression they weren't even used and all that kind of, that sort of thing, prompted us to include in the Book of Solomon's Magic. 2 years ago, we started including an addendum to cover this matter. And the last printing, we actually printed it in the book, but they were including it in the last 2 years. I will read that one page addendum so you can, which kind of clarifies this issue. Here's the addendum. The addendum to the Book of Solomon's Magic 2011. The Book of Solomon's Magic and its companion video, The Magic of Solomon, were and still are the centerpiece of a modern revival of Hermetic Solomonic ceremonial magic. In 1996, we made Solomon's art real for a generation of would-be magicians lost in a maze of Victorian-age Rosicrucianism and theosophic occult speculation. And through 15 years with 15 reprintings of the book and a reissue of the VHS in DVD, we have continued to offer serious students of this ancient spiritual discipline effective practical instruction and well-founded theoretical knowledge in Solomon's art of angelic invocation and spirit evocation. Anything as original and successful as our book and video combination is bound to have critics, and most of these can be politely ignored, but in the last few years, a number of books have appeared which have followed our Solomonic revival trend, reproducing ancient magical texts but offering no effective methods of practice while trying to discredit the practical use of the magic mirror in traditional evocation ritual, suggesting that there was some other secret they discreetly declined to mention, and such a secret, of course, was more often applied to witchcraft than to magic. Now, these old-school writers claim to be reviving Solomonic magic in its pure form, and while they avoid any critique of invocation in a crystal stone, they insist that evocation was a process of spontaneous manifestation outside the circle. Some medieval evocation rites might have followed this archaic model, but Goetic evocation always used a triangle, especially with a magic mirror. Now, if this is true, why didn't the various versions of the Goetia specify the use of the mirror? It seems obvious that a mirror in a triangle was intended, but they stopped short of writing it down because the great-grandfather of the Goetia, Secco d'Ascoli, published his account of summoning a Goetic demon fallen from the ranks of the cherubim and serving under King Amaemon in a magic mirror in the early 1300s. And this was a magic mirror such as the one described in Picatrix in the 12th century, and as the conjuration device of choice for such operations. Now, Secco d'Ascoli was brought before the Inquisition. He was accused of demonic sorcery, and he was burned at the stake in 1326 in Florence, Italy. And his mirror secret did not die with him, but his fiery demise did discourage magicians from writing down any reference to a mirror. John Dee was reluctant to mention his black obsidian mirror. Agrippa scrupulously avoided reference to the diabolical speculum, but it does creep back into the literature in an anonymous work attributed to St. Cyprian, and in the Mirror of Solomon, that appears in the last of the Solomonic grimoires, the Grimoire of Verum. Now, when you read the Goetia in original manuscript form, this all seems obvious, but one of our old-school scholars tries to tell us that the, quote, manuscript of Goetia shows the circle in the triangle in white, not blacked in, as in some published versions. Well, actually, it's just the other way around. Crowley's published version shows a white circle, but in all the manuscript versions, the circle is blacked in or cross-hatched. Justifying another of Crowley's mistakes, he tells us that 2 foot off the circle and 3 foot over has a different meaning in period English. Well, a dictionary of Elizabethan usage does not support his claim, and the instruction means just exactly what it says. And I might add that this same Solomonic expert also declared that the Shemihal Parash had no connection with the Goetia. Well, then, of course, Thomas Rudd had already put the Shemihal Parash verses on the reverse of his Goetic sigils way back in the 17th century. Now, why are these magical scholars and authors in denial on this important aspect of medieval and Renaissance magic? Well, it's partly Crowley's fault for making his 1904 remark about the spirits of the Galusha being portions of the human brain. Now, this was not well expressed, even in the terms Crowley was trying to say. And then, of course, we told you to stare at your own reflection, and we dared to mention Carl Jung's psychology in connection with Hermetic philosophy. And the problem that these old-school magical scholars have with mirror evocation cannot be entirely blamed on their denial of Hermetic mentalism. They probably would have accepted both Hermetic philosophy and the dark mirror at any time before René Descartes. That's 1595 to 1650. And René Descartes declared that only that which we can weigh, measure, and replicate is real, and all else is delusion. Our modern world is driven by this spiritually debilitating concept, and as much as our scholars profess to be reviving old-school magic, they have put Descartes before their horse. Ooh, boy. And if post-Cartesian objectivism is keeping you from the true Hermetic Renaissance magical mindset, I recommend reading The Great Secret in the latest issue of the 7th Ray, Book 3, at the Great Ray. And for a more commentary on old-school magic, listen to the podcast of our October 13th, 2011, The Hermetic Hour, and this, which we are to some degree reprising tonight. Now, I signed it Fabian, VH Fighter, DAL. Okay. So, that's in the present issue of, you know, present printing of the Book of Solomon's Magic. Now, what I want to try to get across here is that, that the magic mirror in magic for evocation has a very, very solid background. And what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to establish this beyond any doubt so that maybe, possibly, hopefully, some of these people will not just realize that it does. You don't have to like it. I'm not trying to get you to like the mirror. I'm not trying to get you to insist that you have to do it or anything like that. And I think if you want to do all your magic in various crystals, that's wonderful, and you should. But I do want to make sure that, you know, or try to make sure that you realize that magic is a balanced system, and the evocation aspect of it really is in the area of the, of the speculum. And so, with that in mind, let's start from the beginning here, and let's start with Picatrix. And then we'll go from there to Psycho Deus Scully, and there from there to the Grimoire Verum, and we're just going to go right through this thing. By the time I get done, you may not be afraid to use a mirror, but at least you'll know, by gosh, you will know that they've been used for a long time. Okay, now, Picatrix, so this is the Latin, this wonderful Latin translation from Latin to English that Michael Greer and Christopher Warnock came up with just recently, which is actually the one that Secco de Ascoli probably used, and the one that's the most important of all, and the original and the most important of all the Renaissance grimoires, the medieval and Renaissance grimoires. Now, here on page 267, in a certain book edited by Geber the Sage concerning tempests and other things, I found this written: make a mirror of gold or gilt silver and suffumigate it with the hair from a woman's chest, which you moisten with your semen, and then suffumigate it with the threads from her garments. And after you have washed yourself, look into it, and you will make her image appear in the mirror, followed immediately by yours, or first yours and then hers. And this experiment is something that Ptolemy of Babylon said, and three sages from India found it in Egypt. And they proved that this mirror ought to be made when the moon is in conjunction with Jupiter and gilded or furbished when the moon is in Venus. But I wish to tell you of the composition of the mirror and how it is to be worked and kept. And for this reason, that all the nature of humanity enters into it. temper the mirror with live and natural blood that is fumigated, and then write on it the names of the seven stars, their seven symbols, and the names of the seven angels and the seven winds, and now the names of the seven stars are these: Zohal, Mustiri, Manek, Zemez, Zohara, Hatarid, Al-Kamar. And these figures are written in a circle about the outer edge, and they are in a ring. And next are written within the polished and gilded circle the names of these seven angels: Kalkiel, Satquiel, Samiel, Raphael, Ariel, Mikael, and Gabriel. And when this is done, the names of the seven winds are written on the unpolished part, and these are the powers of the winds, whose names are these: Archia, Bethel, Almoda, Hamar ben Abis, Zopa, Marak, Fidiarak, Samores, Maimon, Aksami. Oh, this is good stuff. And then suspend the mirror for 7 days in silk of water and fumigate it, and let it be suspended from a red staff, and for 3 nights fumigate it with the wood odors, the best that may be found in the Book of Moses. And if you gaze into this mirror and keep it well, you will see that in it you will gather men, winds, spirits, demons, the dead and the living, and all will obey you and be at your command. Do your work in this manner. The fumigation is of the seven things proper to man, that is, blood, semen, spittle, air, wax, the tears and eyes and feces and urine, and subfumigate with this, and instruct the winds as you wish, and they will do your will. And keep this, and you will experience all that I have said to you, for you will have the power over winds, men, and demons, and they will come obediently to you. Do this over a basin of water, and over some other clean vessel full of water, and you will behold this, and it will be fulfilled as you have asked. Oh, yeah. Okay, that obviously really, really got to old Psychodioscoli, who was, by the way, a very good astrologer. That's around 1320, which is the High Middle Ages. This is still definitely medieval. And Psychodioscoli was quite an astrologer, and astrology was, of course, accepted by the Catholic Church in those days. And there was a famous astrology book at that time was in circulation called the Sphere of Sir Bosco. And Secco, feeling his oats, he thought he would make a criticism of it. So he proceeded to take this mirror out of the Picatrix and summon up what appears to be a goetic spirit. And so I'm going to read this. Rather than just recount this, I'm going to go to History of Magic and Experimental Science, Volume 2, The First 13 Centuries. This is by Lynn Thorndike, and this is an 8-volume set, which is considered to be authoritative on all of the history of all of this strange art. So we'll start here at the top of the page, 964. The fact, however, is that the Church disapproves of magic and vituperates it, does not restrain Secco from frequent citations of books of magic, such as the Liber Artis Magica by Apollonius, nor from retailing to his students much information concerning spirits in the sky and necromancy. And thus, when Sir Bosco mentions the four points of the compass, Secco is reminded of a statement in Liber de Orde Intelligentiarum of Hipparchus that certain princes of the demons occupy the four parts beneath the sky, and for expelled from heaven they occupy the air and the four elements. And when Sacro Bosco speaks of the zenith and the poles in a purely astronomical way, Secco again quotes Hipparchus as saying, "Oh, wonderful zenith and godlike nature, etc." And after the manner of an invocation, and Solomon in Liber del Umbris Idearum as explaining, "Oh, Arctic Manus, oh, Arctic Antarctic Propelled by divinity, why do natures of great and noble seem to be enclosed in mineral species? This last remark, Sekhar explains, refers to the responses given by these spirits in metal mirrors. And when Sir Bosco treats of climates, Sekhar remarks that the word may be understood necromantically as well as astronomically. Imagine the Inquisition reading all this. Zoroaster, the inventor of the magic art, uses the word in the necromantic sense when he says, quote, for those climates are to be marveled at, which with flesh of corpses and human blood give responses trustworthily. And by this, continues Sekho, you should understand that these four spirits of great virtue who stand in Hieratatis Locus, that is, the east, west, north, and south, whose names are Oriens, Amamon, Paimon, and Igium, spirits who are of the major hierarchy and who have under them 25 legions of spirits each, and therefore, because of their noble nature, these seek sacrifice from human blood and likewise from the flesh of a dead man or a cat. But this, Zoroaster, you know, it cannot be carried on without great peril, fast prayers, and all things which are contrary to our faith. But his last word of warning may seem a bit belated and perhaps somewhat perfunctory, but it shows that Sekho is still consistent in recognizing that magic and necromancy are contrary to Christian religion, and in other passages he calls these spirits demons and diabolical, and affirms with Augustine that spirits who are outside the order of grace cannot truly transmute bodies, nor raise the dead, nor do any marvels and feats of magic, except those that shouldn't be accounted for by occult virtues of nature. And in speaking of a demon named Floron, who was mentioned by Solomon in the Book of Shadows of Ideas, and who was of the hierarchy of the cherubim, who was confined in a steel mirror by a major invocation, who knew many secrets of nature and who deceived King Manfred and others by ambiguous oracles in modern times, Sekhar concludes, so beware of these demons because their ultimate intention is to deceive Christians and to the discredit of our Lord Jesus Christ. And Sekhar tells the story of a man in Pharaoh who consulted this demon Floron as to a hidden treasure and was told that he would find enough at a certain spot to last him for the rest of his life. And he dug in the cavern indicated and uncovered only 4 ounces of gold, but as an avalanche crushed him immediately afterward, the oracle was fulfilled. And yet, on the next page, we find Sekho giving the instructions already mentioned for making an astronomical image in order to obtain responses from a spirit. And several pages further on, he cites the response of the same demon Floron as to the time when demons at least are least liable to deceive one, and when, as a consequence, it is best to consult them. And again, as to the divinity of Christ, of whom this demon Floron said, he took upon him human flesh, that all flesh through him might be saved. Hallelujah. Well, you know, maybe if Sekhar hadn't gone to Florence, he might have gotten by, but he went to Florence, and he was called in to a church office to discuss his book. And, well, you know, we've all seen Monty Python. You know, no one expects a Spanish Inquisition. Well, this was the Italian Inquisition, but they burned Sekhar with a stake. I mean, you know, he used to tricky bound burning with a stake, which really sent a chill through magicians all over Europe. And from that time forward, if you had a magic mirror, you didn't talk about it. You didn't write about it. but naturally, the mirrors were certainly there. Anyway, now you notice that Sekho is talking about a steel mirror, and you notice in Picatrix they're talking about a gold and silver mirror. Now we'll get to that in just a second here, because these mirrors were originally kind of Kabbalistic. They were Ispeclaria, and use the Kabbalistic term, and they were made from the different metals of the planets. And then eventually, electromagnetism was kind of conceived of, and eventually they went to obsidian and to black glass. Today, of course, we use an kind of an electromagnetism fluid condenser sort of affair with them, but they were originally the polished metals of the planets. Now, I'm going to try to give you a little reference to that from the best of the Kabbalists, and that's Ira Kaplan. He's passed away now, Leonora Leach's protege. But Ira Kaplan was far and away, while he was alive, the leading practical Kabbalist in the Western world, probably. And in his Kabbalah and Meditation is a very, very fine book. We have some references to the Ispiklaria, and I'm going to read some of those right now. That is, I'm going to read it if I can shovel all my books around here and get that copy of Kaplan over here. And we'll talk about Ispiklaria. And this is very, in practical Kabbalism, this is very, very important. And let's see here. On page 123, this is the light that gives rise to the four illuminations under discussion, which are Mahir light, Zohar light, Mubak light, and light that receives Zohar. And these are the lights that can be seen. Mahir light is the shining glass, Ispiklaria, which has the power to reflect. Zohar light is a glass that absorbs light. It then cannot be recognized except when it is revealed near a shining light. Muhak light is a shining glass in which the color of all lights is recognizable, and through its colors all other glasses are illuminated. Light that receives Zohar is a glass that does not shine. It receives all other lights like a reflector and receives the radiance of the sun, and it can be recognized in it. And the same is true of the light that receives Zohar. The light absorbs all other colors, and they are then visible inside it. And when other colors come near it, they shine into it. It absorbs and gathers them. The mark of each one is then recognizable in it. Now it's kind of cryptic, but let's go to the definition of Ispiklaria. Now this is over on page 317 in the notes. Let's see here. it's page 28. It's page 316 in the notes, the bottom of the page. This is the Ispiklaria, the glass or mirror into which one gazes to see a spiritual revelation. The Talmud thus teaches, all other prophets saw through a dull Ispiklaria, while Moses saw through a clear Ispiklaria. Okay? Now, so we have both the concept of the glass mirror and the concept of the steel and the gold, the silver, and the various copper, various mirrors of the planets. That comes from the old Jewish Kabbalah, and also the glass mirror, the Ispiklaria, comes from that too. Now, this in the Almagaton, the Galatia of Almagaton, the mirror is not mentioned at all. But if you look at that triangle, Sloan 2731, it's all solid black. Yes, obviously the mirror goes there, and in the other versions of the other manuscripts of the Galatia, it's been very heavily cross-hatched in to indicate that it's black. Now, the Gomorrah Verum is later, at least 100 years later than the Galatia. More like 175 years later, actually. And it has a chapter. The Gomorrah Verum, by the way, is not one of the it's not one of the Gutenberg, when the Gutenberg press came out, they started printing books. One of their, these little grimoires, like the Grimoire of Honorius and the Red Dragon and all these little things were almost like kind of like spiritual pornography. They really weren't. They were really not authentic, and they were just probably Arizona the printing press and sold for shock value. But the Grimoire Verum is considered to be a genuine grimoire. Now here is the rare and surprising secrets of magic. This is on page 39 of Joe Peterson's edition of the Grimoire Verum. The manner of making the mirror of Solomon appropriate for all divination. In the name of the Lord, so be it. You will see in this mirror all the things that you will wish. In the name of the Lord, who is blessed, first you must not commit carnal actions, either physically or in thought, during the prescribed time prescribed below. And secondly, you must perform many good works of piety and mercy. And third, take a shiny, well-polished plate of fine steel, slightly concave, and write on it with the blood of a white pigeon in the four corners these names: Jehovah, Elohim, Metatron, Adonai. And then put the steel in a clean white linen, and when you perceive the new moon during the first hour after sunset, go to the window, look toward heaven, and devote with devotion, and say, O eternal, eternal King, ineffable God, who created all things, for the love of me and by an occult judgment, for the health of humankind, look on me, your most unworthy servant, and on my intention and design, and send me your angel, Aniel, into this mirror who mandates, orders, and commands his companions, your subjects, whom you made, O Almighty One, and who were and are and shall be eternally, that in your name they may judge and act in integrity in instructing me and showing me whatever I may ask of them. And next throw in onto burning coals a suitable incense, saying, in this, by this, and with this, which I pour before your face, O my God, who are three and one, blessed, the most sublimely exalted, who watches over the cherubim and the seraphim, and who must judge the age by fire and by wish. And we go on, and this is kind of extensive. I'm not going to read all of these conjurations because you've got a pretty good idea what they're starting off with. But when you finish doing all these things, make the sign of the cross on yourself and on the mirror on the first day of the following days, continuing for a period of 45 days. At the end of this time, Haniel will appear with the face of a beautiful child, and he will greet you and order his companions to obey you. And note that it is not necessarily necessary to have 45 days to make the mirror, but often he will appear on the 14th day following the intention, the devotion, and fervor of the operator. And when he appears to you, request for him what you desire and pray to him and appear anytime that you may invoke him and grant your demands. And when you wish to see in the mirror and obtain what you desire, it is not necessary to recite the above mentioned orations, but after perfuming it, say over it, come Aniel, come and let it be your good pleasure, etc., etc. Amen. And this gives you a pretty good idea. This is quite specific. And now, I want to point out that the old school, one of the old school magicians, who I really think is very, very good, and I think he's one of these people who really did it, and there aren't that many that, you know, that really have built all the equipment and done all this business and really done it. And one of these old school magicians is he's a physicist, and his name is Joseph Lisiewski. That's Lisiewski. And he's written several books, one of them One of them is, has an unfortunate title, Howlings for the Pit, a practical hymn book of medieval magic, Galatian theurgy. Now, when Joseph Wyswiski his first book came out, he was picked as his grimoire of choice, the Heptameron, and he used Francis Barrett's English translation into Latin. And Joseph Wyswiski was brought up, raised a Catholic, Roman Catholic. So he kind of indicated that it would be a good idea if you did this sort of thing, especially if you did the kind of mass you were doing, to go back and recover your childhood. Childhood belief, because belief was you know, the tool that balances this out and gives you the power and all that. And Joseph Wyswiski, you know, is, yeah, he's old school. I mean, he's an old school magician. And his version of how to do the Heptameron is very, very, very interesting, very good. I'd like to try it, frankly. It's barefoot outdoors. I mean, you know, and there's something to be said for that. And he doesn't have any particular, at least as far as I can tell, for the Heptameron, there's no particular focal point or conjuration device such as we have in the Galatia, where we put the triangle outside the circle and you know, try to get the spirit to appear in the mirror. Or if you didn't want to use a mirror, of course you could put the crystal in the triangle or something like that. Not very good, but you could. But with Joseph, he never does quite come up with a conjuration device. So this is campfire, in a sense. This is medieval campfire or dark age campfire magic. You know, anything beyond the circle of light of the campfire is terrifying, and we see the red eyes of the beasts, you know. And so consequently, the campfire, the circle of light of the campfire, becomes the magic circle. This is I think it's kind of primitive myself, but I think that they began, you know, as they got into the late Middle Ages and into the Renaissance, they began to use conjuration devices and more, and this kind of campfire magic sort of went out. But I want to point something out, that Joseph Wyswiski, for all of his old school, you know, his old school orientation and his old school suggestions and whatever, he admits that this mirror of Solomon that we just described in the Gemara Verum, he and his own reflection in the mirror, his own reflection in that mirror, that's what got him started. That was his big experience. That's where he started. And so, you know, even I think in a way that all of the old school people know, they know, they're aware of the mirror. They just don't want to use it. And some of them. And this is fine with me. As far as I'm concerned, if they never look at the mirror, that's perfectly okay. But my only problem is don't go telling people that mirrors that magicians didn't use them, and don't go telling people that this is not a part of magic and all of that, and it wasn't done that way, and don't tell them that either, because it was. And so I really enjoy Joseph Wyswiski's books. I think you learn a lot from them. And like I say, this doing the Heptameron outdoors, your bare feet, and campfire style, I'd like to try this sometime. We wanted to go years ago when Angeles National Forest was opening. There was a very mysterious place called Lightning Point, and it was a campground that was way up on the top of a cliff, sort of jutted out over a valley. And we always kind of thought, like, we'd like to go rent the campground and go up there on the tip of that cliff and do one of these barefoot one of these barefoot around the circle kind of things in the middle of the night with the full moon, you know, and not bother with a conjuration device. It's something I'd like to do, but then the you know, they close down the forest, and that's the end of that. But the other thing that I would like to mention is, and this one comes from German folklore. And oh, by the way, the Saragossa manuscript, and John Potocki was a very, very knowledgeable occultist. The Saragossa manuscript, of course, is a classic of occult lore, and all almost all the magic in there is magic mirror. This is from what I'm going to read to you is from German folklore. This is from Witches, Werewolves, and Fairies by Claude Lecoute, and he is a French anthropologist. And this is one that will go along with what we're talking about. The shadow devil is the intermediary between the worlds. For example, in the ancient Duchy of Oldenburg, the following belief was popular. If between 11 o'clock and midnight, the hour of the spirit, an individual appeared in front of a mirror while holding a lighted candle in each hand, and if this person shouted his own name three times, he would be able to see into the future. And in France, this used to be said. On the night devoted to the Magi, a person wrote the names of the three kings in blood on his forehead, and then looked at himself in a mirror, and he would see himself as he would appear at the hour of his death. Not long ago, people in Germany were persuaded that reading the Bible in front of a mirror would chase ghosts out of the house. And finally, the mirror has been seen as an open window to the outer world, but also as a trap for the soul. In all of Europe, there was a very telling custom that of covering the mirrors in a home where someone has just died. It was feared that the soul might remain stuck in them, or else that the spirit of the dead person would be reflected, resulting in dire consequences. Okay, now, the reason why the mirror is not mentioned in the Gaulish is because of fear. It's because of what happened to Secco de Ascoli. It's because of the actual fear of the device. And I think that fear still exists. I think even though we may not believe as fervently as those people did in those days, but I think that is deep down inside we do. And I think that some magicians are really, they don't want to say they are, but they are. They're actually have a fear of that mirror, and that is a fear that should be overcome, because that mirror looks outward and it also looks inward, and it looks outward and inward simultaneously. And in Hermetic philosophy, of course, you are the center of the universe. So all the entire universe and all of the beings in it are reflected both within you and without in that mirror. And so it is very definitely a part of the magical process. So that concludes this evening's lecture on the subject. And next week, we'll be back with another show regarding Hermetic technique. And so we'll see you then. And meanwhile, good magic.